WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome to another Monday Night Talk, the final Monday night of March. As we move forward, hopefully, we'll feel the effects of spring. My name is Kevin Tachi. We have a great program lined up for you this evening. We will start with a State House report. That's what we've called it for the past 5-6 years. And joining us for the segment is outgoing State Representative Jim Cantwell. If you haven't heard the news, the representative from the 4th Plymouth District is taking his talents to the office of U.S. Senator Edward Markey and going to work for the senator. I believe this Wednesday he is going to be having a little bit of a speech up at the State House, kind of a goodbye. Well, not a goodbye, a farewell. Thanking the folks who have supported him over the many years as he's been a state representative. So we'll have a chance to reminisce with the representative, kind of get his take on moving, going from being a state representative to being somebody who's going to be working closely with Senator Markey. So we'll talk with him about that in just a couple of minutes after we find out what's happening out on the roadways. And as we've done for the past 6 weeks, we try to bring in candidates who are running for local office, whether they're an incumbent, maybe the first time running for office, second time, whatever it is. We did try to line up two, but one of the individuals actually had duties as a selectman in East Bridgewater, was unable to make it. So we will have Mike Mullen. Mike, who is a Rockland selectman, seeking another term. So we'll have Mike in. Mike's a good friend. So we'll talk with him. And then 7 o'clock, second hour of Monday Night Talk, we will speak with Brockton Mayor Bill Carpenter, who we are expecting to be in studio as he breaks down the city of Brockton throwing its hat in the ring to have to be able to offer adult recreational marijuana retail stores and cultivation centers in the city. We'll kind of get his take on putting forth legislation, what the process will be like, how the city officials came to say this is something we want to explore, that this is too good to pass up. So again, Brockton Mayor Bill Carpenter at 7 o'clock, and then we'll close things out with a former colleague and a good friend. We call him the DC correspondent, Mr. Steve Burns, WMAL newsman. We'll chat with him about his coverage of the rallies that were held, well, not only here in Boston and around the country, but down in the nation's capital. So Steve will join us and chat about that as he was in a throng of people, get his take on it. So looking forward to that. Again, coming up at 7:30.
Madman Ohan Jr. is going for his sixth professional boxing victory Saturday, March 31st at Marina Bay Sportsplex in Quincy. Call South Shore Boxing Club at 781-252-0328 for tickets. This show will sell out, so don't wait. Call South Shore Boxing Club today, 781-252-0328. Mike Badman Ohan Jr. brought to you by Brennan Smoke Shop. Brennan Smoke Shop, the very best smoke shop with the very best boxer in Massachusetts. If you don't believe me, see for yourself Saturday, March 31st, Marina Bay Sportsplex in Quincy.
Download previous episodes of Monday Night Talk and listen to them anywhere. Check out 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. And my first guest, this is an individual. He's one of many South Shore elected officials who at any time I've asked that I've called on as part of a nice rotation, he's usually willing. He comes in studio, one of those guys who was very caring in regards to, he's front and center when there are coastal issues, especially when we have a big storm. He's like the guy who's front and center. He's been there in regards to opioids and quality of life issues. Representing, of course, Marshfield, Scituate, the 4th Plymouth District. We have State Representative Jim Cantwell. And Representative, I'm saddened to hear that coming up in about a week and a half, you're going to be saying goodbye.
That's right. Well, Kevin, it's a farewell, which is not goodbye. It means we will be still anytime you need me to come in and chat about things. And it's been fun co-hosting in the past or coming. You know, thank you. First, I want to start for everyone listening in WATD. Thank you to the voters of Marshfield and Scituate for giving me the honor of representing them at the State House. This has been by far the most, the greatest professional honor of my life. And Jen, Chris, and I want to thank you because it's been a great way to contribute to quality of life here in the South Shore. And I want to thank WATD for the intense focus on all the things that we do at the State House and here in the South Shore. It's a great partnership, I guess, just so that people know on the South Shore that their voices get heard and then that we act upon them.
You know, and it was a small microcosm, but I also know that you've also been one of the many representatives who led the charge when it comes to the Talking Information Center.
Correct.
Knowing that their funding is so important and essential.
Right.
People don't realize that when the services that the Talking Information Center provides to those folks who are, you know, their sight is impaired.
Right. It's over 30,000 people who are either blind or visually impaired in Massachusetts. They would have no major contact to the outside world if it wasn't for the Talking Information Center. Right. Really is the manner for everyone to get their daily news. It could be the Boston Globe. People read the Marshall Mariner. And one of the biggest things that people get their news, it can be folks who are just reading the circulars that are at Star Market or at Roach Brothers. Lots of programming, so they get to have, it can be dramatic plays that get reenacted.
Specialty programs, yep.
So many. So it's when you think quality of life, and what I'm very proud of, there's so many things in Marshfield and Scituate, but here, the Talking Information Center, right here out of Enterprise Drive, right here in the same building as WATD, doing programming, and by the way, over 300 volunteers who come in to do the reading. Doesn't matter, rain, snow, or likewise, people are here to make sure that they're serving folks, and it's a critical role for state government to help.
Hey, well, let's not forget, also, one of the key components, especially when it comes to election time and you ask the voters what's important, economic development, jobs. You've also been a leader in that area.
Sure. And it's always intensely local. Here we're sitting on a Monday night, getting in, coming with rush hour traffic. When folks in Marshfield particularly will know the Route 139 had been a project for 20 years that my predecessor made sure to push and get all the engineering, all those things done, but it wasn't going to happen. And it took a whole bunch of folks, Ed Perry being one of those leaders, to meet with then-Governor Patrick and make the case saying that we need just that small amount, $5.2 million of infrastructure money opened up Route 139 to all forms of commerce. So we have five new businesses that are already on 139. As we have Enterprise Drive, have full build-out, that there'll be 900 new permanent jobs, according to the South Shore Chamber of Commerce. That was one of the first things that I'm very proud to have helped lead with the help of not only Ed Perry, but people like Peter Foreman, who at the South Shore Chamber of Commerce. Sure.
So the news is that you're going to be working with U.S. Senator Ed Markey. How'd that come about?
Ed Markey, last year, coincidentally, because we've been working before on issues like flood insurance. Ed Markey was the first federal official that we had come to Marshfield when we made the case for why the then act called Biggert Waters was devastating to any folks who lived along water. It wasn't just the coast. Anyone who lived along rivers, if you had ponds, that, as you know, Kevin, because WATD covered that first hearing back in 2013, when we showed that if we had not changed federal law overnight, people could have lost 90% of the value of their homes. So we had realtors there. We had bankers come and say, listen, if you don't change that act, we're going to have a run on foreclosures because people will stop paying. We had local police, fire, teachers saying, if we don't, we're going to lose a lot of tax revenue. It'll affect all the services that we provide. We had homeowners like David Ball say that it was going to affect just the whole litany of things that would affect homeowners, that you would then see a lot of vacant properties. Ed Markey was among the first. He was the first to come to Marshfield and among the first to speak out that we needed to change that act, which we did. So the people in Marshfield and Scituate should be so proud that our two little towns were able to band together and make a tremendous difference on federal policy with people, frankly, leading the way, which was Ed Markey, Elizabeth Warren, Bill Keating, Stephen Lynch. So a few years ago, we had been working together. Last year, I saw Ed at the Women's March. I happened to be standing next to him just by coincidence when he went up to speak. Thereafter, I flew down with the South Shore Chamber of Commerce for an event, the New England Council, to press important business issues. We met with Ed Markey early on, met for about an hour. Thereafter, we had him come and testify in April as the featured speaker for our Promote Prevent Commission, which I know we'll mention a little later in the interview, or hope to talk about. But he was one of the people who nationally has been a leader on opiate prevention. Just got a bill signed by President Trump just back in January. There's a picture of President Trump and Ed Markey working to stem the tide of fentanyl coming into the United States. He works across the aisle very well. Thereafter, we both spoke at a program in Taunton on the opiate issues. It just turned out, issue after issue, we kept seeing one another. It culminated where last fall, Josh Cutler and I were selected. We were four people selected to represent Massachusetts at an international conference with the United Nations talking about climate change. It was in Germany. And the featured speaker for the United States was Ed Markey. And we ended up catching one another there. So from all of those things, they unbeknownst to me, the chief of staff for Ed Markey, Mark Gallagher, wonderful friend, had given notice after 22 years he was going to be moving on. And they were compiling a list of people to interview. Just a little over a month ago, I was at an event where Ed Markey was speaking about net neutrality, and he came down and was speaking to me and said, hey, Jim, would you be able to talk to me for a few minutes? And that's when he let me know that Mark was leaving. It was a secret at the time, but would I be interested in interviewing for the position? And I said, it's very, very, very exciting. I said, sure. And seven interviews later, I was announced to have been hired to be the new state director for Senator Ed Markey.
What kind of thought process had to go into that for you? Again, somebody who's well-established with your political career, you're well-known, somebody who I think I've told you, I kind of saw you going upwards, whether you ran for a constitutional office or if you ran for the other, you know, if you ran for Senate or something like that, I kind of envisioned you running for something higher eventually.
Yeah, the thought process is at this stage in life, our Christopher, we are incredibly proud of our son, is going off to college this September. Yeah. Thinking at a time where in life, I love the job. Being a state representative is an incredible job. If people have the time and the inclination, you can make a difference from A to Z. We just had model legislation dealing with autism and actually for AA was Alzheimer's just last month. We're working on zoning reform, everything in between. You can really, every day, you can go home and put your head on the pillow and say, I helped make a difference today on issues. Because it also can be individual. About half of what we do is helping someone calling in with something as minor as an issue with the Registry of Motor Vehicles. Can be as major as battling with insurance companies to cover life-sustaining treatment. So it's a great, great job. Love it. This was an opportunity. I said, well, I can be able to take the same kind of skills and passion and now can be able to effectuate federal policy for someone who's been there for 40 years, who knows everybody. Every time an issue came up, he's able to give a history of what's worked, what can't work, what kind of things you do, what ways to bring together Republicans and Democrats. He's truly, for folks who don't know Ed Markey as well, he really is the Ted Kennedy type of a person who can be very liberal and passionate on many, many social issues, but also is very respected among the business community because he gets things done. So when they first talked about it some 5 weeks ago, I said, wow, that is incredibly exciting. Let me, the answer was, let me talk to my wife, figure it out, but would like to interview. And with every interview, I became more and more excited as I learned from people who had been in Ed's life for some 40 years of the major differences that he has already made and what kind of work I could be able to tackle working for him.
Very interesting. Again, we're speaking with outgoing state representative Jim Cantwell, who will be making his speech April 4th.
April 4th at 2:30, open to everyone listening here in WATD land on this Monday night, think a week from this Wednesday. If you have the time, come to the State House. It's a nice ceremony. It will be very bittersweet. One of the people introducing me will be Josh Cutler, my great buddy from Duxbury.
Member of the law firm.
That's it. We go. we always say Cantwell, Cutler, and Coulter, but they call it a different title. It moves...
It will forever be one of my, other than the Marshfield Hills General.
Yes, Steve Carell.
Their commercials with his wife Nancy and Tish. The law firm, was it a year and a half ago?
It was, the last election cycle, 2016.
Last election cycle where you guys, a clever, showing that you guys can work together.
Absolutely. And on the South Shore, just to give a shout out, not just for Josh Cutler, and for Tom Coulter and Joan Moschino, but people need to know what true friends we have. Pat O'Connor, who's a state senator, Republican state senator. Vinny DiMacedo, a Republican state senator. Matt Muratori. Quite honestly, people, I think it shows, we're all good, good friends and work extremely closely on every issue that that comes down to help one another, help our region.
Are you going to miss that, though? Are you going to miss that camaraderie? Are you going to miss that in a working? I'm sure you know every path into the State House or the shortcuts to the governor's office, or there's certain little things that take place throughout the year that are celebrated at the State House.
Absolutely,
that you're either front and center or you're part of.
It's a bittersweet time because it will be difficult to leave a job that I absolutely love. But it's good in life to have new challenges and to try to tackle areas where, again, what's good is, as I've been seeing to all our friends, they all have my cell phone. We're talking about all these different federal issues. Because if you live in the South Shore, you come across, and frankly, people know this, but the federal government touches almost every aspect of our lives. But specifically, when we're dealing with coastal issues, David Ball can attest, there are so many times we want to see things change for how we have coastal adaptation and infrastructure. We need federal support. FEMA's right there at the forefront, and we have to tweak some issues with FEMA to make sure that we are able to see them continue to do their job and enhance their job. Army Corps of Engineers, we have a number of projects all up and down this Massachusetts coast that we need to try to prioritize, but many in Marshfield and Scituate particularly. We had the EPA regional administrator come to the North River back when there was funding threatened for that scenic river. Wanted to help there. Those are the coastal issues. But then think, my goodness, for all health and human services, TIC is one of the ones that gets swept up when there are major reductions in funding from the federal government. But South Shore Hospital, Beth Israel Deaconess, all of them realized that if there were changes to health care delivery from the federal government, it would have had a tremendous impact on our lives here. So it's exciting there. So many issues at a national level that I am very, very excited to be able to work on.
So knowing that you're going to be stepping away, any concerns as to who might fill the void come November, be sworn in next January? Any concerns? Because anytime there's an open seat, usually there's a whole host of folks who will throw the hat in the ring for the voters to eventually, of course, whittle down during the primary. Any thoughts, any concerns as to who or whom would be best fitted for that role as the next representative of the 4th Plymouth District?
Yeah, I don't take them so much as concerns. I think it's an exciting thing for someone. When people listen, that this is it's a very intense job. So since I've come in 9 years, let's call it 9.5 years ago when the election had finished in November of 2008, the challenge is for someone running, you have to realize this is a more than full-time job. Because you know, to do the job well, you need to be at the State House for every informal session if you can. You have to be there every formal session for votes, so that's 3 days a week. You have multiple hearings. I'm on 4 committees. I'm on Judiciary, where we just finished a criminal justice bill. I'm on healthcare financing. We're doing a healthcare bill that I'm sad that I'm going to miss most of the back deliberations. I am on telecommunications and energy. There are things that Josh Cutler, by the way, is leading tremendously in that field. And Joan Moschino, by the way, all three of us are on the same committee. And I'm on the education committee. We just reported out a school resource officer bill that I got included into our judiciary criminal justice bill. 4 very busy committees. I was at the State House, on average, was 4 days a week. And then the one day you do on Fridays, you do your office hours. So the one thing I would say, I've had 8 different people call seriously interested, and we've had good discussions about what the job entails. So the first is just that personal commitment. It helps to make sure if someone's been an elected official, that helps because you've already done budgeting. You're already interacting with the public. You already know how to convey important information at town meetings and the like. It helps to have at least an understanding of some of the state political process, because it is true, we were talking before of how to get things done down here. A lot of it was just being tenacious about getting Deval Patrick to come and to visit this district 5, almost 6 different times, and then we could make the case with local leaders for how we needed help on 139. For example, or getting Ed Markey to come so we could talk about flood insurance, or making sure with Governor Baker coming recently, viewing the damage so that we his announcement that ATD covered so well just a week ago Friday of my seawall and dam fund that I helped create. The governor now putting $120 million into that account through a bond. It's great. But that comes just by being tenacious, showing that you're being a hard worker, and then articulating on every issue that comes across your desk that has an interest. And I can tell anyone interested in running, it's like a blank slate. There are set things every representative has to do. But the sky's the limit when you want to work on issues and really throw yourself into it. It's a very exciting way to contribute to our quality of life.
What would you say is some of the key things that you'll miss about the position that you're having a bittersweet moment about saying, wow, I'm going to miss this, or I'll miss this part of the job.
There's so many. It'd be hard to say just one. The camaraderie of folks. So when we have our caucuses, so you can have raucous meetings of all Democrats to learn about the interests of people like Smitty Pignatelli, who's out in the Berkshires, and when we talk about the T and what we needed for investments to make the T operate better, believe me, folks, it's something that if you're on the South Shore, we rely on public transportation quite a deal, and we need to have Keolis has been a major disappointment. We need to have better transit services. Governor Baker's administration is working hard on it. Legislature is working hard on it. So I'll miss being in the scrum when you can have those kinds of debates and push the interests of your region while you're learning about the interests of others. Going to miss, frankly, a lot of the small, I don't think they're small, actually, but the times in life that are special for each, like Eagle Scout ceremony. My son and 4 other great friends just became Eagle Scouts. So to be able to go and to acknowledge the great accomplishments of people in this district, to go to major ceremonies when you can make sure that you're telling people that their tremendous work is improving all of our lives and making sure they know that we credit this service, like retirements for teachers and firefighters, police. So those are things. The job, it's so multifaceted, and every day is different. So that's one thing that I'm going to miss. But at the same time, I know that still be able to work on those issues. It's just now going to be now for all the Commonwealth. So we can't just focus on Marshfield-Scituate. But there will be a way to continue to contribute to issues here for the towns that I love so dearly.
Talk about tackling the new job. What's some of the aspects that are going to be vastly different that you're looking forward to understanding and getting a grasp of?
I think because just the breadth of them. I'll give one example just over the last few months when President Trump talked about allowing offshore drilling and the fact that offshore drilling, it's unified, not only Governor Baker on the Republican side and Senator Markey leading on the Democratic side. It's unified people in New England, but it would be a disaster for our natural habitat. So we have fishing interests coming out against it, the tourism interests coming out against it, business interests. But that's very much going to be a battle. But I'll be excited to help work for Senator Markey as he leads that effort with others. Net neutrality, for those listening, anyone who right now with our smartphones and we're on the internet, when you want to have a free and open access to internet services, you don't want to see these major internet companies being able to charge you more right. In order to have some of your access. It's very much a consumer protection issue. Ed Markey's been leading this issue for much of his career. He's been one of the leaders on all telecommunication issues. Be exciting to see the context that he's brought and the breadth of those issues. Gun control, we just did the march yesterday. I see you have the front page of the Globe from yesterday.
Absolutely.
Yesterday's Globe. But for Ed, he filed an act just last week that has bipartisan support to try to codify what we do in Massachusetts for sensible gun control, to take what we do and codify it around the nation, to be able to work on those types of issues. Those, along with, we continue to have our coastal issues. Ed Markey came, I forgot to even mention that. Ed had come last year to the South Shore when we toured coastal infrastructure and said we need a major commitment of the federal government to help us deal with the triple threat of rising sea levels, of more frequent storms, and crumbling infrastructure. Ed was at the forefront, Ed Markey, Senator Markey, coming to tour with Trish Van Casey, the then town manager for Scituate and officials. So all those things and issues that we've already been working on for opiate use prevention and prevention, period, that Ed Markey's been a national leader on. So I'm looking forward to all that.
Well, I guess this is the time where I give you, if there's anything you wanted to say to the voters, the folks who have supported you, maybe some of your staunchest critics, is there anything you wanted to kind of say to the folks who you've represented in Scituate and Marshfield, what would you say to them?
I'd end with the same way that I began, with a very sincere thank you to folks. And as you actually point out, you cannot, in politics, people get into trouble when they want to be loved by everybody. The reality is you work hard, make priority issues, listen to everybody, and that's it. But this is where I stand, and be comfortable with whomever takes my spot. They just need to be comfortable that you can't please everybody, and that's okay. If you enjoy the conversations and enjoy the fact that our region and our country are better served when we all get to be heard. The worry right now is people are just focusing only on, it's people only listen to Fox News, or they only listen to CNBC, or they only, we need to have more of a collaboration, because as I often point out, two of my best friends here in town, Barbara and Otis Carney, happened to have run the Republican town committee years ago. I was running the Democratic town committee. We came together because we saw a common need for the Daniel Webster estate, and we worked to make sure to preserve and protect that estate, putting aside any partisan issues. That's the best of our town. That's the best of our nation. So in my closing is to say, once again, thank you to voters of Marshfield and Scituate. I can't tell you how much I've appreciated the last 10 years of working at this job. I so much appreciated your trust and your support. I look forward to continuing to earn that and a new capacity of helping to do things for Senator Ed Markey, whom many, many people already know, but you're going to love the more that you learn and see of him, because he's already been doing great work to help our region. We want to accentuate that. I want to thank WATD for the intense focus, always for news. Kevin, I appreciate you having me on many, many Mondays. Appreciate with Ed Perry always being kind throughout my lifetime. Frank, I've known Ed since I was 13. And Christine James, we always like to see the debates when she always, I'm always thinking about, making sure to keep everybody on target. But thank you very much. And this really is a farewell. It is not a goodbye. There will be many things for us to work together on. And I look forward to coming on your show again and having my new boss, Ed Markey, come on sometime in the near future.
Well, yeah, again, it's always a welcome door. It's an open door policy. You know that you're always welcome, especially you give me a call. Hey, you got any time on Monday? That's happened a few times.
Great.
Okay, absolutely. That's the idea of this program is to allow all, whether you're a D, an R, or you're unenrolled, or just, a Joe citizen. You want to, talk about a particular issue, and you've got, the leading information on it. I'm all ears. MondayNightTalk@gmail.com. If you have an idea for for conversation. And congratulations, Jim. You deserve it. You've worked hard. And again, you know, folks who are running, who are already throwing their hat in the ring, you're going to be a tough act to follow.
They'll do it.
But the whole idea is for them to, you know, set their footsteps in their own, you know, in their own direction, not following your shadow.
To absolutely agree. And believe me, the people I've been talking to, there are some phenomenal folks. I do want to, in closing, make sure that people know the office still operates. If you contact me, 617-722-2396. I'm there for the next week and a half. But Gigi Meraki, who's helped run my office, she was Frank Hines' chief of staff. She's been there for 26 years. She will still be there, sure, making sure to take care of all matters for folks. Josh Cutler is handling all Marshfield legislative matters. Joan Moschino shares situate with me, and Pat O'Connor has both towns. So we're not going to miss a beat. You know, these folks are phenomenal friends. We're going to make sure that the work keeps being done. And folks should come, if they can, Wednesday, April 4th, the week from this Wednesday, 2:30 p.m., come to the State House. We're going to, you know, it'll be my farewell speech, and then we're having a reception there. So everything's free. It's your house. It's your building. Please come on up.
There he is, State Representative Jim Cantwell, our guest for this segment, a farewell, not goodbye, a farewell, as he moves on to a bigger and a better things, and we'll have him back on here many, many more times down the road. So we're going to step aside just for a moment, and when we come back, more Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
It's Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, we're back here at the broadcast house. You are listening to 95.9 WATD, Monday Night Talk. And just a quick reminder again, Jim wanted me to just make sure I reiterated that 2:30, he is inviting folks to come on up to the State House this Wednesday to say farewell. So just keep that in mind if you want to be a part of the farewell tour, so to speak. Joining me right now is a gentleman who we've had in here a couple of different times, not only as a candidate, but things concerning Rockland.
A whole bunch of things. How are you, Kev?
A whole bunch of things. Mr. Mike Mullen, who is going to be on the ballot this spring.
Yes.
Seeking re-election. You only served, what, 1 year so far?
2 years.
2 years, okay.
So yeah. I was elected to fill an unexpired term for 2 years, and this year I'm up for my first full three-year term.
How was the first year? How was your first term?
Exciting. I was elected 2 years ago this April, and really I hit the ground running. When I ran and decided to run for selectman 2 years ago, I wanted to hopefully bring people together to kickstart a lot of the work in downtown Rockland to really hopefully like recreate and to revitalize that. We've been able to do a lot of work in that area. I also wanted to really like bring a lot of new people into Rockland's government, really like engage folks my age, folks a little older, and and really like hit the refresh button in terms of who made up the typical Rockland government, and really charted a progressive future forward, and we've been able to do that too. So it's been fun focusing on things from economic development to education to cell phone towers to rent control. The breadth of issues has been exciting, and I think Rockland's really in a good place. It was in a good place before me, I think we're we have a great board now, and I think we're headed to an even greater place now, and it's exciting.
It's interesting to see you. You were somebody who, you're not new to politics. You served as a member of the school committee.
I did.
It sounds like it's so vastly different compared to where you're looking more at education and how you do more for the school system and to be able to bring monies in and certain programs too, where now you're more on the municipal side.
Like, it is and it isn't. I mean, and first of all, the 6 years that I spent on the school committee, it was, I look back on those 6 years and, to be honest with you, those 6 years were just very, very extremely rewarding to me. A selectman is also, but there's really something special about being like a member of the school committee and, and seeing really the tangible results, the impact for, students and kids and teachers, and the impact that's having every day. But, I would say the two roles are different, though. There are a lot of similarities in terms of, the overall, whether it's, collective bargaining issues, whether it's budgeting issues and making sure everything, really tries to fit in that box that we have to deal with as schools and as cities and towns. But I think the breadth of issues is a different thing. I mean, a typical Board of Selectmen meeting for us, the breadth of issues will range from rent control to economic development to a state grant.
Common vehicular's licenses.
Exactly.
Gamut, yep.
The chance to have an impact and to have a meaningful impact, beyond the educational system, that's been exciting. And I think that's really where the difference lies. But again, there really is something special about my time, the time that I had, on the school committee that I just, I look back at and I looked at where we were, what we did. We were at that time as well in a really pivotal time for the town of Rockland in terms of the investments. Going back to 2007, we were making in education, the investments we were making in our buildings and, in a period of, a great recession, we came together as a town and, we built a new middle school that was attached to a renovated high school. We passed, I think, back in 2009, a $1.8 million override to reinvest in our town. And, to be part of that, that was exciting. But I think where we are now in 2018, I think we're just as a, we're just at a pivotal time, charting our course forward. And, I think, the timing here, in terms of, the opportunity that we have really once every 10 years to make decisions that will really impact the town for, in hopefully a very positive way for years to come is exciting.
What do you feel some of the proud moments as far as any key initiatives you've been able to lead or organize, especially when it comes to the old Air Force Base or mm-hmm. the revitalization of the downtown mm-hmm. corridor and stuff like that?
In terms of, you know, Union Point and the old South Weymouth Air Base, you know, the progress there, actually right when I was, right after I was elected, a few weeks later, the town did pass, you know, the change in zoning that will yep. Hopefully set that up for years to come. And that's exciting, you know, we've been saying, and I really believe that we're laying the foundation for that now, you know, that whole area, those zoning changes really made it possible for that whole area to have way more promise than it did before. And, you know, I think, you know, with the foundation that's being made, with our continued efforts to work with Union Point and to have a Union Point work with the state to identify water and sewer and other infrastructure needs, you know, like I think, you know, once that... All that happens, hopefully, will be set up in a very good spot for years to come. But I think in terms of, you know, one of the things I've been most proud of is, like last year's town meeting, shortly after I was elected, we began talking about implementing a 40R smart growth overlay district.
Correct.
We spent the better part of, I want to say, seven or eight months working with MAPC, working with residents in town, working with downtown businesses and folks throughout Rockland Center to really, you know, create a 40R that...
Was there a committee set up for that? And were you, were you a member of that committee?
Yes, I was a chairman. So we established... it was fun, you know. But we established a committee. You know, we spent many nights. I mean, and I said this, I think one of the last times I was here... going through Rockland Center parcel by parcel, having a very deliberate process about which ones we would include in the district, which ones we wouldn't, for, you know, a whole host of reasons. And we went through that process. We worked with partners. We worked with the state. And last May, we were able to successfully pass that through town meeting. So that was one of, the highlights of the past 2 years. But then to really use that effort as the foundation to create a working group that we now call Reimagine Rockland to continue those efforts forward and to really remarket and to brand and to focus on business development things. We just had the first part of the month a restaurant week that was spearheaded by Michael Laughlin, another member of our Board of Selectmen, you know, and so really to harness the work around the 40R, like, and to move it forward and to reimagine Rockland and, you know, really to bolster all those efforts. You know, that's been probably the most exciting. Actually, late last week, we received a notice from the state that we got a second grant from the state to the tune of, I want to say, $15,000 to continue to be able to hire a consultant to continue a lot of the organizational work.
This isn't part of a compact with the state in regards to, is it in conjunction to that?
Like, it's separate from the community compact program.
We're
this
correct,
grant.
Yep.
We actually, through the community compact program, have done a lot of work with information technology, but this grant is separate from those grants that we've also received, and this actually comes from the Department of Housing and Community Development's Mass Downtown Initiative program. So it's exciting. We have a lot of good things going, but you know, equally important and exciting has been just you know, the chance to connect with and to help and to work with you know, residents, friends of mine, neighbors of mine, who I've known my whole life in Rockland. You know, I grew up there. Like, I went through the Rockland schools. I mean, it's my hometown. It's Rockland is just very personal to me. So just from a very personal level, to be able to give back, to be able to be involved, like, in the town where the town that I've always known, the town that I'm raising my family in now, you know, that's
twins.
Oh, a twins and a wife. Twins. And just an incredible family. That's just as meaningful to me, you know, as a downtown grant or or like any other stuff that we're working on, because, you know, it's all about just helping people, you know.
You are listening to 95.9 WATD here in Marshfield. You're listening to Monday Night Talk, and my guest for a few more moments is Mike Mullen, Rockland selectman seeking re-election, coming up in a few minutes. We anticipate a conversation with Brockton Mayor Bill Carpenter, who will be joining us here in studio for the conversation. But back to you, Mike. And you talk about being somebody, a Rockland guy, mm-hmm. and being a selectman. And people know who you are. People are passionate when it comes to municipal issues. And I'm sure that they stop you in the grocery mm-hmm. store. They see you at the post office. And think, Mike, you know, I got concerns about this. So maybe if you're on the floor of town meeting, what are some of the people who are, you know, going to be out there voting this spring saying to you, bending your ear as to some of the things that you should keep your eyes on for the next term? Or do you already have a bucket list of things that you want to kind of work on moving forward if you're successful for a second term?
And yeah, like I've been hearing a lot. One of the things, just going back to like Reimagine Rockland for like a moment, like in the fall, you know, we like convened a meeting of our parents from the three elementary schools. Oh, you know, almost like a focus group, but more of a conversation to hear from them. You know, what they thought downtown Rockland should be, what they thought Rockland was and should be, and what their perceptions are. And it really, you know, like it validated, honestly, a lot of, you know, what we've been thinking about the need for residents, you know, to really want to be informed and like information shared with, so they know what is happening in their town, and so they're in tune to the different types of needs and projects we have ongoing. But and then like some other things also, we got to hear, for example, we heard about, you know, lighting downtown, and you know, how some people we heard from that evening really weren't comfortable walking downtown at different hours of the day. And you know, just hearing things like that, you know, we actually have an LED lighting retrofit project that will be happening shortly, which will hopefully address some lighting issues and improve lighting in the areas. But just really, you know, the need for folks, you know, to want information from their town, to know what's happening, to be really plugged in to town government. And that's one thing. But I think the other thing is also, you know, we do have some, you know, some needs and capital needs in town. Right now, we're actually like renovating the Veterans Memorial Stadium, and we're doing that without having to go back to the voters for a debt exclusion. We're handling that within our existing budget, which like
under the levy limit, so to speak.
Exactly. Yeah, like, yeah. And if you look back 10 years ago, Ian asked us if Rockland could have had the capacity to be able to ever deal with that, probably everyone you would have asked would have said, "Oh, you know, heck no, not at all." But we've been able to do that. We have last election, Rockland voters passed the CPA, the Community Preservation Act.
Yep.
So we have, in total, we'll have about $400,000 a year, roughly, to be able.
And for folks who don't understand what the CPA is, the Community Preservation Act is, that's a certain percentage of monies that come from where?
Local taxes. Basically, there's a smaller surcharge on that Rockland opted into, that residents of a bunch of South Shore communities have opted into.
Correct.
At this point. And just like a small surcharge like on the local property taxes. And,
right.
You know,
and that can be put towards certain projects,
we can use
certain community-oriented projects.
Exactly, like athletic field, yeah. Our historic spaces, historic preservation, housing, and there's one more. I think there's four tenants. But, you know, we'll have that money to be able to use to address some needs. But there's also other needs. I mean, we're hopefully going to have a new elementary school project come forward.
Okay.
We're working right now with a, as part of a fire station, our building committee, to entertain the the construction of a new fire station in town, which is badly needed. Our current facility is very, very old. I think the original was constructed in the 1920s. It was added on and just not conducive to be a fire department anymore without some serious work or a whole new building altogether. So, like, we're going to need some serious investments in town, but it's, and balancing how we do that, it's making sure we're all rowing on the same direction to make sure we have a strategy, because all these things, you know, they cost money. They cost money from the town. Yeah. Like, and at the end of the day, they cost money from the taxpayers. And I think everyone in town, residents like me, you know, my friends, my neighbors, you know, they want to know where we're heading and how we're going to deal with all these needs and challenges and how we're going to move forward. But so it's exciting.
Again, Rockland Selectman Mike Mullen, my guest. When does Rockland hold their town meeting, and when do they hold their... How does it work? Is it a town meeting and then election, or is it election then town meeting?
A town election then town meeting. So okay. The town election is Saturday, April 14th, ooh, and which is 3 weeks...
just under
3 weeks away now, and I believe that town meeting this...
Like 2.5 weeks away.
A year is... May 1st, Monday, May 1st, I believe. If May 1st is a Monday, it always is the first Monday in May. So it'll be a busy few months coming up.
Anything you want to say in closing to the folks who are tuned in right now in regards to you're seeking another term, and as far as, you know, what you're going to look to do for the community, you know, after the 14th?
No, just, you know, really thank you to the residents of Rockland for this opportunity, for the opportunity to serve. You know, we really, you know, I think we're really in a very good place in town right now with our board. We have a great dynamic board working hard for the residents of Rockland. And to be, as I mentioned, to be able to be part of that, to be able to contribute and to hopefully lend the expertise that I have and to, you know, to help my hometown, to help our community, and, you know, to move it further into the future is exciting, and it's been rewarding, and, like, I'm looking forward to, you know, the opportunity to serve for another 3 years and go from there. So thank you, Kevin.
I shake your hand, but both you and I have been very sick, so I won't
exactly
do that.
Hopefully folks haven't heard my sniffles. it's been a fun week in heaven.
Well, best of luck to you.
Thank you.
We're gonna step aside for a moment, but when we come back, a second hour of Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
I'm Tiny of Tiny & Sons Glass. Broken windshield? Insurance covers it. Tiny works with all insurance companies.
Hey, Dad, we work with Allstate?
Yes, we do.
How about Amica?
Yes,
how about Arbella?
Very good.
And Commerce?
Very nice.
Even Geico?
Geico, yes.
Hanover?
Hanover Insurance? Good people.
Liberty Mutual is supposed to be pretty good.
Liberty Mutual? Yes, sir.
MetLife?
MetLife, yes.
Pilgrim?
Pilgrim, I know them.
Hey, Plymouth Rock. How about Plymouth Rock?
Plymouth Rock, excellent.
All right, Progressive, I heard. And Safety?
Safety. Safety is my friend.
And those guys at Tower Group. I thought they were tough, but they've been pretty good lately.
They should buy me lunch.
That's right. And how about USAA, the troops?
USAA is perfect.
We support the troops. We work with them all.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINYS. Just call.
Follow Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, we are back here, second hour of Monday Night Talk. Coming up later on in this program, Steve Burns, WMAL's Steve Burns, giving us kind of an idea as to some of the stuff he was in the middle of down in D.C. during the big rally, March for Our Lives. We'll talk with him about that. But right now we have Brockton Mayor Bill Carpenter has returned home to Marshfield.
That's right. My hometown.
His hometown. You want to say hi to Dad?
Yeah, I'm sure Dad's listening.
How's Dad doing?
Dad's doing great. And Marshfield High, class of 74.
Go Rams.
Yeah, that's right. It's true.
We get you here to talk a little bit about some news, some major news for the city of Brockton. Talking a little bit about adult recreational marijuana.
And almost brings me back to Marshfield High, class of 74.
Cheech and
Chong. I've come full circle.
Cheech and Chong.
Just kidding.
Next movie. Kind of give us, we've done a news story on this, talking about you have filed legislation, something that you had mentioned during a chamber event?
Yeah.
Or something for the Bridgewater State University?
Yeah.
And that you're going to look to invite this industry into the city of Brockton, and there's been plans, there's a design to this. When did the administration first start exploring, this industry and seeing if it would be something that would be good for the city of Brockton?
Yeah, well, I'd say we began talking about it the day after the election last year when the referendum ballot question passed. We knew it would be coming. We do have some experience in Brockton. We do have a medical marijuana dispensary that's been in business in the city for about 2.5 years now. So unlike most communities, we do have an existing marijuana facility. So we've had a little experience with that. But really, I'm taking a completely pragmatic view of it, Kevin, and that is that whether someone thinks it's a good idea or doesn't think it's a good idea, it's here. The ballot question passed, the legislation is passed, the regulations were released 2 weeks ago, and come July 1st, adult recreational marijuana is going to be here in the Commonwealth. And, you know, as the mayor of a gateway city like Brockton, where we, you know, are really struggling with our budget, we're anticipating a school budget deficit again this year of maybe $13, $14 million, that I just don't know how we don't take advantage of this opportunity. And I think the key is, and what I've said to folks, is that, you know, we're going to implement this carefully, thoughtfully. We'll work with the city council. We'll listen to public input. But I believe it can be implemented with minimal or no negative impacts on the city, but with the potential for the city to reap millions of dollars a year in revenue between taxes and a host community agreement that our city desperately needs.
You talk about being pragmatic. You're somebody who usually thinks outside of the box. When you first took office, one of the things that you looked at, where your predecessors were like, well, maybe we shouldn't look at a power plant, that this was the gas-fired power plant that was long discussion. Why not look at it? You took a look at possibly bringing a casino to the city, seeing that there could be some money realized if the Mass Gaming Commission.
I still haven't completely given up on the casino, but that's not happening tomorrow. But this is on the doorstep right now. And you're right. I've said from when I first ran for my first term that Brockton has to look for alternative sources of revenue. We cannot rely only on our property tax base. We do not get the same level of aid from the state that cities like Brockton used to receive. So you're right, we do have to look at alternative sources of revenue. And this is one that, you know, the regulations were released 2 weeks ago. It's here. There are tens of millions of dollars of investment floating around the state right now looking for communities to invest in. And I don't believe we'll be the only city that decides to host marijuana facilities, but I think I'd like to be one of the first ones. I believe that if we're getting in, we need to get in. And you know, it's not without certainly being cognizant of the concerns that some folks have. And I certainly share those concerns. But I think that with the right regulations, with the right implementation, that we can do this in a manner that it won't have negative impacts.
What's the appeal for a city like Brockton, A, where it's something that's being accepted, and you look in the greater Brockton area, there are a lot of your neighbors who are already passing bans and bylaws to prevent the sale, the retail sale and grow facilities.
Yeah.
How does that make you more appealing
right.
to anybody who's coming in and looking to invest?
Every time one of our suburbs decides to ban retail adult recreational sales, I think it makes Brockton a more desirable location because I think that companies that are looking to come in and sell retail will see us as kind of being the center of an entire regional marketplace, not just the city. So instead of being a city of 100,000 market, I think we'll be a region of 200, 250,000 people. And, you know, Brockton has a lot to offer in terms of a location. You know, we've got great highway access. We've got opportunities. Our real estate is relatively affordable compared to many other communities that they may look in. And, you know, what I see from this from a mayor's standpoint is I see expanding the tax base. I see property taxes. I see revenue for water. I see creating jobs. The cultivation and manufacturing is a pretty labor-intensive operation, and I see folks that will be able to train for good paying jobs. I'm certainly cognizant of some of the risks that people are concerned about, but I think we can address those in the manner in which we implement. As an example, I've proposed retail sales only in the downtown business district and only at the second floor and above.
Right.
So I believe that will preserve it'll minimize the visibility, preserve the image as you drive through the downtown. You won't be looking at, you know, every other block a marijuana shop. They'll be up on the second or third floor where they'll be far less visible, where there won't be any exposure to children. The only people that will be there are the people that are supposed to be there, age 21 and over. And the reality is this is here. Whatever the consumption's going to be in Massachusetts, that's what the consumption's going to be. And folks that want to buy adult recreational marijuana will purchase it. And I think, you know, we've had cases of many cases at our emergency rooms of people overdosing because they bought marijuana that was laced with fentanyl or some other drug, and they ingested it not even knowing what they were ingesting.
Right.
So whether you agree with it or not, legalized cannabis sales is going to provide quality control. It's going to provide a safe marketplace. You know, it's in a city like Brockton. I'm concerned about gun violence that takes place around illegal marijuana sales, and I think we can eliminate some of that. So, I mean, is it a panacea? No, I don't think so. But I do believe that the city of Brockton can see millions of dollars of revenue. And to me, that's school teachers, that's police officers, that's roads.
You know, you just mentioned a moment ago as far as zoning and how important it will be, especially in the downtown corridor. And I know that there's been work over the past many years trying to, you know, redevelop the downtown corridor. What kind of a supply and demand is this going to cause in regards to, you know, pot shops looking for second and third floor, you know, retail space?
I think it brings investment. So I think that these companies, at least most of the ones that I've had a chance to speak to that are looking to enter this industry in Massachusetts, they're pretty well-heeled. So I believe that, you know, many of them may decide to redevelop existing buildings, build new buildings. The cultivation facilities, which in our proposed zoning would only be allowed in industrial zones, you know, they're talking 50, 60, 80,000 square feet that they're looking to develop. Multi-million dollar investments, and whether they renovate an old building or build a new one, these are huge commercial investments. And, you know, I believe in Massachusetts for the next 10 years, this is the fastest growing industry in the state for the next 10 years. And as a pro-development mayor who's trying to rebuild a legacy manufacturing city like Brockton, I want to be on the front edge of that fastest growing industry for the next 10 years.
Like hemp shoes or something like that?
Yeah.
See, Nebraska used to be the shoe capital of the world? No, you're absolutely right. Because when after the ballot question passed, we had State Treasurer Deb Goldberg on and talked a little bit about it. And one of the things that she said was, this is the one thing that's highly sought after. And I don't know as much in regards to cultivation, but folks who wanted to have the retail licenses to be able to sell adult recreational marijuana, which is going to be, again, those communities that say no, very good. At least that's right. You know, that's up to them in their communities.
But and I'm looking forward to their residents driving to Brockton with their disposable income, parking their car, getting out, coming in and spending some money. And I'm looking for the revenue from that host community agreement, allowing us to provide the things for the downtown business district, walking police patrols, bicycle police patrols, increased lighting, video cameras, improving our infrastructure, rebuilding roads. Well, the revenue that's generated from that host community agreement is going to make those things possible.
And again, you said Brockton City Council, Ward 2 City Council, Tom Monahan, is actually sponsoring this legislation. What happens now that you've got somebody who's sponsoring this? How does the progress go from there?
First reading in front of the city council this evening, coming up at 8 o'clock. I would anticipate that the council will probably refer it to the ordinance subcommittee, and then the ordinance subcommittee would then schedule a public hearing. And we've got some work to do in this. We don't think the legislation is all done. We're looking at this as a starting point. We believe we've got a good first draft on some legislation. But it's going to need more work. You know, the regulations just came out 2 weeks ago. We're all still learning the regulations and the nuances of it. But, you know, the state began issuing applications today. They're going to begin accepting applications next week, and July 1st is not very far away.
Right.
So I felt it was important. We had draft legislation. Let's get it filed. Let's get it in front of the council. Now we'll work with the council. We'll work with the residents to come up with a final draft that makes sense to everybody.
So my question too is let's say this is able to make it through the ordinance, you're able to put some legislation in place. Will there be a separate commission? I know you have a licensing commission, or will there be a subset of the city's licensing commission to oversee this?
So I guess that's one of the things that will be determined in the final regulations. I don't believe that's necessary. I think the most logical approach for communities to use is to treat it just like alcohol. I think it's a very close analogy to alcohol. And I would think that our license commission that licenses all the alcohol establishments in the city is very capable of also licensing for adult recreational marijuana.
Have you had any, other than Councilor Monahan, have you had any chance to have any conversations with other city council president Dennis Iannieri, or any of the at-large councilors to kind of gauge where they're at with this?
I think that the vast majority of the councilors, I believe, are receptive. Cautiously. Mm-hmm. They certainly want their opportunity to have their role in the development of this, and I welcome that. And I think everyone shares the same approach here, Kevin, and that is, let's get it right. And I want to get it right. The council wants to get it right. And I believe we will get it right.
One of the big things that I know you've been a staunch advocate, even your days as prior to being on the school committee, is in regards to the opioid epidemic. You're somebody who the governor tapped to be a part of his working group that toured the state to kind of put things in place under Governor Baker. How does this tear at you in regards to you looking at an industry coming in, but yet looking at some folks look at marijuana as a gateway drug?
Right.
Not everybody has that thought, but there is that opinion.
You're right. So I think I've got some work to do with some of my friends in the recovery community. I think that some understand my position and some are disappointed with my position. In the recovery community, some folks are harm reduction folks, and I kind of fall into that group. And I think that I believe that there's a role for medical marijuana as an alternative therapy for chronic pain instead of opioids, and that this can be a tool that we use to reduce the dependence on opioids. I think that for some folks, perhaps marijuana use can be part of a recovery that doesn't include It doesn't include heroin or opiates. But I think also it's important for folks to realize right now with our medical marijuana facility, we have a host community agreement that pays us 3.5%. 1%, one-third of that money goes to Brockton-based nonprofits that provide treatment and support to folks struggling with addiction. I believe that as we develop these new host community agreements going forward, that it would be perfectly appropriate to maintain that approach, that a portion of the host community agreement money that is desperately needed to go to organizations, not just our Champion Plan, but Teen Challenge and the Salvation Army and the Dwina Martin House and other organizations that are helping people who are struggling with addiction, can derive income from this. And I think a lot of good can come from the money that's generated in that direction. I hope folks will see that.
And I think you and I, when we did an interview for a news story, one of the things that you had indicated is that your medical marijuana, the medical marijuana facility that is operating, have they not paid into or put money forth?
Right. So we're, this is one facility that just started 2.5 years ago. But, you know, last year, they're called In Good Health, selling medical only, retail only, did over $10 million in sales last year. Right. Most people in the city don't even know where they are.
Right.
This is why I do believe it can be implemented. But yeah, it generated 70 some odd thousand dollars last year that I was able to dole out to organizations like the Champion Plan that is saving lives every day, helping hundreds of people get into treatment, Teen Challenge and the Edwina Martin House, a long-term residential program for women. And there's a disparity in the availability of treatment and residential programs for women versus men right now. We've got a great program in the city that we're able to support. So I think that one of my arguments to my friends in the recovery community is I believe that this is here anyhow, whether we have it in Brockton or not, but at least I'm going to do it in a manner that I make sure that a portion of the money that's generated gets in the hands of those who are helping others who are struggling with addiction.
And it's probably worth noting that you usually have conversations with your department heads on a regular basis.
Oh, every day.
And two of your most important department heads probably don't have an issue with this because they haven't had any problems with the medical marijuana facility that you have in town.
Right. So the medical marijuana facility we have that's been there for 2.5 years, I asked my police chief and I asked my fire chief, and they both tell me they've never had an issue with the operation, don't have any concerns. So obviously in large cultivation facilities, the fire chief is going to want to make sure that we have very careful oversight of fire and safety codes. But in terms of a public safety impact, we have had absolutely none from our medical marijuana dispensary.
And it is not like anybody would even know what the facility looks like. I would think that anybody who's going to come into town, you're not going to want to see a big pot leaf on the side of a building or anything that's going to indicate that, hey, this is what we're doing, we're growing here.
Right. Well, and I think that this is
very discreet.
Where we, with the ordinances and the regulations, that we can implement this in a way that it won't have those impacts.
Okay, we're speaking with Brockton Mayor Bill Carpenter. We're talking a little bit about recreational marijuana. Is the
adult recreational
adult
marijuana, age 21 and over.
Yes. Yeah. And I've tried to specify that a couple of different times. Is the mayor's here with us just for a couple of more moments. If things happen to be able to go through the proper processes with the city council, putting things in place, when do you think the city could start accepting bids or looking at shops opening?
I'm hoping that we can stay on a timetable, that the city is prepared and ready to be open for business on July 1st, to the same date that the state has prescribed and that the state regulations call for. But we've got a lot of work to do over the next 3+ months or so to get ready.
Anything I haven't asked you in regards to this issue or this particular industry that's looking to come to Brockton?
Well, I see this as an opportunity for revenue for a city like Brockton. We've lost 150 permanent positions from our school department in the last couple of years. We're looking at a $13-14 million deficit again this year. I think we'll have to close at least one school again this year. I just don't know how I lay off one more single teacher, how I could do that and leave this money on the table. It just doesn't make sense.
Here he is, Brockton Mayor Bill Carpenter. Thank you very much, Mayor, for
great to see you, Kevin.
For coming home, coming to Marshfield.
Back in town.
And we'll follow the...
And not even... I usually come down in the warm weather months, so this is an exception.
It was even odd. Usually we have the mayor of Whitman here.
Yeah, there he is.
With his pie, Richard Rosen.
That's right.
To make sure the next time you're here, he's here.
All right, we will.
We will step aside, and when we come back, more Monday Night Talk. We'll talk with former WATD alum Steve Burns. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Monday Night Talk.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Ever see a windshield crack grow smaller? Not ever. I'm Peter Brown of Tiny & Sons Glass in Pembroke. Windshield cracks grow like a bad toothache. The reason is, you come out of your warm house into cold air. You reach for that cold door handle. Your windshield is cold. You turn on a defroster. Your windshield is hot. Windshield expands. Not much, just enough to pull that crack along. Advice, check your windshield now. Little dings, starburst, bullseyes. We'll fix them before they grow awful. Just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
It's the final segment of Monday Night Talk. Thank you very much for keeping the dial set right there. Now, the segment that we're going to do, typically, it's usually at the front end of the program. Because it's a news item. But I kind of felt like, as I've explained many times over the years that I've been doing this program, this show I kind of look at it as a meal. You start off with, the appetizers. You get into the entree right around the 7 o'clock hour. And then we slide into dessert right around 7:30, 7:45, something like that. But this kind of has a twinge of, while it's got that entree feel to it, it also has a little dessert that we're going to pile in on the backside. A la mode, maybe. We have good friend, former colleague here at WATD, now, of course, doing his fine work down at WMAL in D.C., our nation's capital. We have Mr. Steve Burns back on the program, our D.C. correspondent. How are you, sir?
Well, I'd like to think of myself more as a dessert delicacy, but however you want to consume, that's fine. That's up to you.
No. Listen, anybody anybody who's you know, you and I have got a little bit of a kinship when it comes to... sports, especially when it comes to the baseball. So that's what I was kind of meaning, is that we're going to get a little chance. You know, I get the Nostradamus in you to kind of give me an idea as to where you feel your Oakland A's Athletics are going to finish this year, and I can see where I think the Red Sox are going to finish, even though, I get a rookie manager and, you know, a lot of the same talent. Not a lot was done in the offseason, so I don't know how right. I really feel. And knowing that, you know, our nemesis, the New York Yankees, have exponentially improved at least the offensive side of their team.
Yeah, they made a couple changes.
They made some changes, and of course, I'm still a little sore that they were able to steal away Sonny Gray from you guys. But
yeah, I am too. We can bond over that.
Then we can bond over that. But I wanted to have you on. We had you on not too long ago. To talk a little bit, we've seen more and more, it seems like it's the day and the age of folks protesting and rallying, just to kind of mobilize and get the word out in unison. Maybe not always in unison. There's always a little opposition to something. It's never 100%. But this past weekend, we saw a big rally, not only here in Boston, in the Boston Common, but a huge rally in the nation's capital, and I believe you were somewhere in the throng of young folk who are out there expressing themselves concerned about another, you know, mass shooting while being educated.
Right, and I think you said it when you mentioned young people. It really was a strong showing from young people, whether that were it was college students, high school students, even some children that were there with their parents. I've been to a lot of these large gathering type of rallies in D.C. They happen yearly or even more often than that. But if you ask me about the demographics, I could very easily tell you that this was the largest showing of young people in this type of rally that I've ever seen. And obviously that's an attribution to the organizers of this. It's been led by the high school students mm-hmm. in Parkland, Florida, that went through a mass shooting about a month and a half ago. And it's wherever you are on the political spectrum, you have to hand it to them that while they were grieving the loss of their classmates, obviously a lot of raw emotion, they put together a rally that, by all accounts, in terms of logistics and safety, went off without a hitch.
So I have to ask you, it's kind of, you know, I'm recalling here one of my earlier visits down to see you, and actually on the morning of me heading back north, I believe a couple of years ago, the Pulse nightclub took place, and you were actually breaking the news then on MAL.
Yes, I do remember that morning. Yeah.
So, I mean, how do you, in retrospect of an event like that, knowing that there were rallies after that, we had rallies when Donald Trump was being sworn in, folks who were not happy that he was going to be number 45. How do you put this in comparison with some of the other rallies or protests that you have been, you know, covering?
Yeah, there's always some big event going on in D.C. I was part of the President Trump's inauguration. The next day, I was part of the Women's March. Yep. There were a couple other smaller marches after that. And, of course, what happened this past Saturday. I would put what happened this past Saturday right up there with some of the larger gatherings that we have seen ever in D.C. I believe we talked to the police chief a little while ago. He mentioned President Obama's first inauguration as the largest crowd he can remember in D.C. I don't believe this stacked up to that. It was probably closer to where the Women's March was, maybe slightly fewer. We're still waiting on official crowd estimates. Obviously, you might see some numbers that are put out there. I've seen anywhere from 200 to 800,000, and those numbers are sometimes politically skewed to make a point if they're not coming from official sources. So we're still waiting for official numbers, but if you just want my offhand guesstimate, I would say it's definitely up there with maybe the top 5 to 7 largest gatherings in D.C. history.
Yeah, I've read some stuff online that this really is in comparison to the Vietnam War era, when there were a lot of protests going on, protesting our participation in that war, so to speak, and having American lives over there, and folks questioning why we were there in the first place.
Right, and we're hearing a lot of parallels with that and with the Civil Rights Movement, when it was young people, again, yep. that were leading the charge, essentially. And essentially, you have to give credit to these kids that they've been able to keep this issue in the news for so long. Obviously, we have tons of, well, I don't want to say tons, but there are more mass shootings than there should be in this country. And it just seems like, at least from a news cycle perspective, and Kevin, you could probably speak to this too, it happens and maybe it stays in the news for the next 1, 2, 3 days, and then it kind of just fades into the background after a little while. The shooting that we're still talking about happened about 6 weeks ago, and we're still talking about it, and the students there still have their names in the news, and I think that's largely a credit to their social media usage, their ways of knowing essentially how the media operates. It's unique to, I think, this event, that these kids have been able to keep this in the news and keep the issue top of mind. We just had a shooting at a school pretty close to here in D.C., down in St. Mary's County in Maryland.
Right.
And again, those names from Parkland popped up again, and they sort of used that as evidence to say, again, this problem still is out there. This problem hasn't been fixed. And they're able to sort of leverage social media in that way, and that's why we're still talking about this 6 weeks later.
I think a lot of it is frustration because not a lot has been done. Every time we turn around, there's something new happening. Is that right?
Yeah, it just sort of seems that way, and that's why these kids' names are still popping up, just like after that shooting in Maryland. We saw those names pretty soon afterwards saying this here, right here, happening right now is evidence that this problem is still out there and still needs to be fixed.
Yeah, we're speaking with WMAL's Steve Burns. Steve, also a colleague of mine here at WATD before taking the flight down to Fenway South, as we like to, or in the area of Fenway South, as he's down in the nation's capital. It's interesting to put it into perspective. It wasn't too long ago, a more recent shooting that we had, that I was looking on the internet, and some of the research that I found is the school shootings are like shootings. It's not new, and it's not new over the past 15 or 20 or 25 years. But the problem is that it's more so in the number of fatalities and deaths since Columbine. But you go back 100 years, and you can find that there have been, on a regular basis, you know, a handful of shootings where 3, 4, 5 people have been wounded or a couple people have been killed, but never on the scale as we have been seeing these days. Yourself, you're a young guy, but you probably worked, you know, your time was probably just on the cusp of Columbine, maybe after that, no?
Yeah, I started school same year Columbine happened. Mm. And to your point that these events seem to be getting more lethal, I mean, even if you take it out of the school's context, we're right near a city that has a huge gun violence problem in Baltimore. And Baltimore Sun, I just recently read, did a study about the shootings that have happened there. And they're finding the same thing, that there are a lot of shootings, but the proportion to which those shootings end up with someone dead is rising very fast. And that might have something to do with the bullets, might have something to do with the power of the weapons that are being used. And you find that same thing happening in schools at the same time, that they're becoming more deadly. It's not just people getting injured, but it's people getting killed.
I would ask you this, as being somebody who was in the middle of everything that was taking place on Saturday, did you find it that there was everybody was in unison as to the message? Or did you find any outcroppings, any small groups that were opposed to this rally?
They're kind of different factions. I didn't find any real counter-protesters. There was one guy with a megaphone who was there for about 5 minutes until he got shouted down. There was no real formal counter-protest. I think, obviously, there's a lot of different viewpoints, but probably people that are more in favor of gun rights realized that this is going to be a big gathering and wanted to let those people have their day and have their say. As far as the messaging from the hundreds of thousands that were there, I asked a bunch of them, you know, the Capitol's right down the street. You could see it behind the stage. What do you want the lawmakers that work there to do? And honestly, I got dozens of different answers. There wasn't really one specific policy change or law change that they wanted to see. One of the more prevailing ones was a ban on assault weapons. But it seemed like the prevailing theme was that a change needs to take place. There's a determination there and a hope there that change needs to happen. But what form that change takes, I think, still needs to be spelled out a bit.
I definitely agree with you. And it depends on as far as how the current administration handles it. But it seems as though the current administration is having trouble keeping its administration together.
Yeah.
with a new face and a new individual, you know, being, you know, named to take the place of someone who has stepped down, stepped aside, or has been, given their walking papers by President Trump.
Yes, and we've seen that there might be an appetite from the Trump administration for some more gun restrictions. There was obviously that meeting at the White House that happened in the days following Parkland, where he proposed some pretty radical, by Republican standards, type of changes that most of them did not make it to see the light of day afterwards. So there is an appetite among the Trump administration, at least there was that one day. It's a lot of the Republican people in Congress that really had the ire of a lot of people yesterday, especially Florida Senator Marco Rubio, who I think was mentioned more than anyone else, given that a lot of the student speakers yesterday came from Florida.
You know, and knowing that 8 months away from midterm elections, this is a time that the Trump administration has to sit down and say, we need to do something while we still have the numbers in the House, you know, and in the Senate. You know, if we're going to put anything forth, and if we're going to, it's going to be anything meaningful before we see a flip, whether it's in the House and or Senate.
Right. And I think that was another big prevailing theme. It wasn't just about changing gun laws at the march. It was feel the power of our vote, essentially. A lot of the students there might not be voting age. We actually heard from an 11-year-old who was from just across the river here in Alexandria, who led a walkout from her elementary school last week. And she looked at the Capitol behind her and said, it's just 7 short years until I can vote. I don't know what... I remember being 11, and I don't remember thinking about what it'll be like to vote. It's clear that the students here, the kids, the children that spoke, all have a sense of determination, and they're going to use their vote to essentially distill that determination. So if I were a politician, I'd definitely be taking that into account in the future.
Being the combination of not only a fantastic anchor and reporter, but you're also a young guy. Does any of this tear at your core, where a part of you feels that you want to see something done, or you say to yourself, I don't know if enough hasn't already been done, and it's just a matter of looking at other issues like mental health? Where do you stand in the crux of this, being a young guy, but yet somebody who's trying to, you know, navigate the middle of the road as the best as you can?
Yeah, it's a good question. Obviously, we can all agree that these mass shootings should not be happening anymore. I think it's just such a complicated issue, and that's kind of the trap we fall in the news business all the time, is that we kind of distill an issue down to one side versus another, mm-hmm. where one side is the ultimate solution and the other side is complete garbage. But that's not the case here. Obviously, it's a complicated issue. It has to do with guns. It has to do with mental health. It has to do, some would say, with video games. It has to do with oversight. Obviously, the shooter in Parkland had the attention of law enforcement, but nothing was done. It's definitely a complicated issue, and it's one that needs some time and needs some serious deliberation, and that's what's been missing from a lot of the proceedings here in Washington, has been reaching across the aisle and asking the other person, hey, what do you think? Can we find some middle ground here? It's not going to be an easy issue to solve, but obviously it's one that a lot of people want lawmakers to start working on.
Interestingly, put it in perspective that an 11-year-old looks at the Capitol and says, one day, in 7 years, I'm going to be able to vote. Do you feel an issue like this is robbing from our children's childhood?
That's an interesting question. It feels like if this is what they want to get involved in, then they have every right to. That same 11-year-old, I should give her name, it's Naomi Walder from Alexandria, Virginia, and she mm-hmm. had an extremely powerful speech. She told everyone towards the end of her speech, I've been told I'm too young to have these thoughts on my own. I've been told I'm just the tool of an adult. She said that's not the case. These are my own thoughts, these are my own passions, and if it's something that truly concerns them, and obviously it is the thought of having someone with a gun come into your classroom, then they, I believe, should be able to advocate at least for some change that they want to see.
Well, you just think about it. I mean, you know, a school, we think of it as a learning institution for, you know, individuals to go in and absorb as much knowledge as possible and then put that to use, you know, for the remainder of their lifespan. Not necessarily that it's going to be a war zone at any particular moment.
Right. And I mean, if you want to look at the mathematical odds, there are obviously much more dangerous things and much more likely ways to get injured than in a school shooting. Like being in a car is a pretty dangerous activity if you look at statistics. It goes to your point that schools are supposed to be the one safe place for our children, and parents trust that that is what's going to be the case. And when that trust is eroded, that can really tug at the heartstrings. And I think that's why this is an issue that hasn't gone away.
As a reporter, as an anchor, are you going to be watching for those candidates who are up for re-election later this year? You're going to be listening for their message and see if anything that has transpired, especially with this latest rally, that it's going to be something to be part of their message to be able to woo voters?
Absolutely. And I think they'll be watching both the message and the donations. The NRA was also obviously a big target at the rally. We have a couple swing districts in Virginia, a couple congressmen and women who might have a tough time this coming November. And if voting rates go up, I mean, we've seen voting rates among young people are pretty abysmal. I believe somewhere around 15% of people 18 to 30 or so. Voting rates among people much older are much better. So if that trend is changed a bit, we might see some sea changes coming this November. It still might be too early to tell, but all signs point to a blue wave coming from the political scientists that we've been talking with here.
Okay. Anything you want to put in as a closing perspective on not only the shooting 6 weeks ago in Florida, but the powerful messages that were heard, not only in D.C., but all over the country?
Yeah, it just seemed like the prevailing theme was determination. They might not have been all on the same message in terms of their policy proposals, but the sort of the same message was heard in their determination and their hopes. I spoke with one mother who drove with her 16-year-old daughter from Ohio, and the reason I spoke with her is because her sign really caught my eye, and it said, "I love my daughter," with a little arrow pointing to where her daughter was standing. "I love my daughter more than you'll love your assault rifle." So if you just take that at face value, you can tell this is really an issue that has all kinds of meanings, all kinds of different meanings for all kinds of different people. So, again, it's a complicated one. It's not going to be solved tomorrow. And I think that's really what the majority of people want, is for lawmakers to come together and find some common ground.
And again, I appreciate you sharing some of what you've been able to experience and report on and share it with our audience up here. It's good to be able to get a different perspective from somebody else who's kind of watching what's going on in another neck of the woods.
Absolutely. I will tell you, if anyone remembers what I went through with the Women's March, where my cell service died and I had to make a bunch of very much in a protest mood type of women angry. That did not happen here. I was able to stay a little further back and maintain my cell service and thus kept my bosses happy. So it was pretty smooth.
Yeah, it sounds like a win-win for you.
Yes, it was.
Well, speaking of win-win, we should probably just slowly segue into talking baseball. I believe the Boston Red Sox, my Boston Red Sox, will be starting their season down in Tampa. We'll see what happens. Alex Cora will be the new skipper, and hopefully it's going to be a promising year. Hopefully they can improve upon 93 wins. How are you feeling about your Athletics?
I'm actually pretty hopeful. I'll be hopeful for exactly half of each game that we play, and that'll be in when our offense is playing. We have a pretty good offense. Obviously, Matt Olson, our new first baseman, he got a lot of attention last year when he just kept hitting home run after home run after home run. It'll be when our pitchers are out there that I'll be a little more worried. Our starting pitching is looking abysmal, and a bunch of different injuries. And this goes for us as much as it goes for you in Boston. I think Houston and New York just look unbeatable at this point, and they only got better in the offseason. So I wish you the best of luck.
Why is it, when you look at a team like the A's, do you get frustrated as a fan that you still got Billy Bean, who is, you know, a movie was made about him and how different he was when it came to talent, evaluating talent and picking guys to play for him, and it did produce a winning formula for an amount of time. But it's kind of fallen off in the past couple of years. You had a guy like Jake Arrieta who was just sitting out there. You had a lot of free agents that were just kind of, you know, when spring training started, a lot of guys who were still up for grabs. And I mentioned Arrieta because it's a guy who, you know, is coming off of years, a couple of years removed off of being a Cy Young Award winner and knowing that he gets scooped up by somebody like the Phillies, who, you know, like, what do they got? And how do you feel as a fan?
Yeah, I don't know. I still respect Billy Bean, and I think he makes more good decisions than bad ones. Mm. And he knows how to put together a winning team. The hump has just been the postseason, where even his best teams have just fallen entirely flat. I think if there's anyone to blame in this ownership, it is the ownership, given that we're still looking for a stadium about 15 years after the search started. And that's been essentially the whole reasoning as to why we need to have a cheap team with no big-name talent, is because of our stadium. And once that gets fixed, then who knows, we could be spending money that has been unseen in the past years. So if there's anyone to blame, I think it's probably ownership here, and kind of they've been hiding behind the curtain for a long time here.
Well, I think the Red Sox were a victim of that for many, many years, where they'd go out and sign the best slugger that they could find. A lot of times they'd be stopped towards the end of the season because they didn't have the pitching. They had the bats, they just didn't have the pitching when they needed it.
Yeah, and you could see in this past postseason how valuable pitching was. I mean, Houston essentially rode Justin Verlander's shoulders the entire way, and their bullpen was asked to do all kinds of incredible tasks, like their closer pitched something like 2 1/3 innings one game. I mean, I think postseasons are won on defense and pitching. It's pretty clear at this point.
Yeah, I see Houston and the Yankees being the two teams that'll be head and shoulders. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the National League. I think it's going to be a toss-up in my book. I mean, the Dodgers, I think, are going to still be in it. I don't know about Washington. Washington seems to, again, they get there and then they just kind of...
Yeah, it's another team where the postseason hump is, it's tough. Right. They got a new manager this year, Davey Martinez, who was Joe Maddon's number two, and a full season of Adam Eaton now, which should help.
Oh, boy.
It's Bryce Harper's walk year, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that.
Well,
it's the talk of the town here, what's going to end up with happening with him.
Yeah, but the problem with the one, and we'll leave it on this, the one thing with Harper is, he hasn't gotten through. It's rare that he gets through a full season without being injured and being on the shelf for a while.
Yeah,
he seems to. He has more antics than he has, game-winning hits. And yeah, I mean, is he an exciting player? Yeah, but you know what? I think he has to mature a little bit. I think he's going to find out that the market isn't going to be as thriving as you look at this offseason. Again, we were able to score a guy like JD Martinez who thought he was going to get anywhere between $200 to $250 million, in a nice fat 7 to 8 year contract, and instead he had to swallow his pride, and he's got a contract that has a bunch of opt outs. We'll see what ends up happening.
Right. Well, Bryce might be in a different category because of how young he still is. I think teams are looking to go cheap on those older players that might not have their best years ahead of them, but. He's rumored to go anywhere from staying here to Dodgers, to the Yankees, to the Cubs. And I think he's got the talent to back it up. He's not, he might be a little more injury prone, but he's got the talent. And the antics, as far as I'm concerned, we could have a whole other debate about this. Oh. I entirely agree with him. Oh. Baseball needs to be more fun.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Well, listen,
more personality.
I want to thank you very much for joining us once again.
And, my pleasure.
And of course, we'll have you on again soon enough, and we can tease more baseball stuff. You and I, of course, we've yet to discuss where we're going to go, other than going to a Boston Red Sox game or going to a game down in the Baltimore D.C. area. So we'll tease that for the next time you and I have a conversation.
Yes, we will be doing that.
Excellent. There he is, Steve Burns, WMAL's Steve Burns, formerly of WATD. That, my friends, is the end of the program. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a great evening.